something about it. Don't be a passive leader. That is your family. That is your household. That's your checking account. My wife's gotten us in a big mess. Hey, start doing something about it.
This is Straight Talk.
Welcome to Straight Talk Radio. This is Joshua Hollick, your host. Today, here with Pastor Mark Jobe, Senior Pastor of New Life Community Church, for the second half of a message titled, Keeping Your Faith While You Wait. We're in Genesis chapter 16, and Pastor Mark, we're talking today to people who are struggling to wait on God's best.
Yeah, so Abraham is known as the father of faith, right, Joshua? But yet, even though he's the father of faith, he really struggled like you and I do waiting for God's best. And he compromised. I mean, he made a mess. Talk about a mess. He's waiting for a child and he can't get it. So Sarah has this bright idea. Well, you know, it's not happening here. So how about Hagar, who's basically my servant? So Abraham says, all right. And he makes a huge mess. He tries to substitute his solution for God's promise. Mm-hmm. And how many of us do that? Yeah. We want what God has for us, but we substitute our solution, our compromise, for God's promise, and it creates a mess.
Yeah, and in the second part here, you're going to be talking to us about how we need to take ownership. I love how this was Sarah's idea, and then she says to Abraham, she says, you are responsible for the wrong I'm suffering. Once things turn wrong, it's like, you know what? It was his decision. It was his responsibility.
And no matter who pressures us, ultimately, we are responsible when we exit the door, our waiting door, the wrong way, when we take a compromise solution, no matter whose idea it was, ultimately, we are responsible for the choices that we make. So someone's listening right now, and you are being heavily tempted to take on a compromise solution that you know is not right before God's eyes. And I want to challenge you to stop right now and say, I'm going to choose the harder way, even though it may take longer, but I'll choose the harder way over the easier way that does not have God's blessing.
That's good. This message is titled, Keeping Your Faith While You Wait, Genesis 16. Let's get right into the Word.
Spiritually, many of us are in the waiting room facing issues and problems, and our flesh is always looking to escape the waiting room through the shortcut of disobedience. In fact, it leads me to my third point. I want you to write this down. Keep in mind, if you're in the waiting room also, keep in mind that you are responsible for your actions regardless of who pressured you into it. I love this. Look what it says in verse 5. Then Sarah said to Abram, you are responsible for the wrong that I'm suffering. Wait a second. Hit the rewind button. Now, if I remember right, in verse 2, Sarah said to Abraham, hey, here's my servant, take her. Now, in verse 5, after she gets pregnant, Sarah's telling Abraham, hey, Abraham, you're responsible for this mess. Now, if your husband here, don't raise your hand if you can relate. And she could have said, wait a second, it was her idea, but after Abraham went for the idea, now she's blaming Abraham for the problem. Let me tell you, she was right. Because if you're the leader, you are always responsible for the decisions you make, regardless of who pressured you into those decisions or not. You are responsible. Hello, men. I don't know if you remember in Genesis. In the book of Genesis, the Bible says that God placed Adam and Eve in this garden, and he forbid them to eat from one tree that was in the middle of the garden. And Eve had an idea that the serpent gave her, and the serpent said, hey, why don't you eat of this fruit, and then you will be like God. And Eve said, aha, I like that idea. And so she took the fruit, and she ate some, and she gave it to her husband, Adam. And then everything fell apart. Their eyes were open. They realized they made a mess. They went and they hid themselves in the garden. And when God went to look for them, what did God say? Eve, Eve, where art thou? No. He said, Adam, Adam, where are you? He didn't call for Eve, he called for Adam. Finally, when Adam showed up in front of him, Adam said, "Well, I was hiding, and it's the woman you gave me." I mean, God, I didn't have a choice. It's not like you created three and said, pick one of them. I mean, you gave me one. I mean, it's the woman you gave me. I had no choice. And of course, Eve said, it wasn't me, it was the serpent. But what I want you to understand is that if you're the leader, if God has placed you in a position of responsibility, then it doesn't matter who's pressuring you. Don't blame it on your wife. Don't blame it on your kids. Don't blame it on your mother-in-law. Don't blame it on your peers. You take responsibility for your decisions because ultimately you are responsible for the decisions that you make. And so Sarah said to Abram, "You're responsible for the wrong I'm suffering. I put my servant in your arms," literally. "And now that she knows she's pregnant, she despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me. Your servant is in your hands," Abraham said. "Do with her whatever you think is best." And Sarai mistreated Hagar, so she left and she fled. Here's what I want you to know, that oftentimes leaders, or if you're in a responsibility of leadership, there's two temptations that a leader has. Number one, to be a passive leader. A passive leader is someone that's not willing to make the tough decisions. He abdicates his decision-making power. You know, those things are going wrong. The house is going in the wrong direction. He's just passive. He's just sitting on the couch with another Dunkin' Donuts dribbling down his stained T-shirt. "Yeah, I don't know, honey. You know, that you deal with it. Get off your chair. Do something about it." Don't be a passive leader. That is your family. That is your household. That's your checking account. My wife's gotten us in a big mess. She doesn't handle the finances. Well, hey, start doing something about it. I mean, this woman can't handle the kids. I mean, they're out of control. Yeah, her kids? Yeah, her kids are out of control. Wait a second. Have you ever noticed when they're misbehaving, it's her kids, and when they're doing well, it's our kids? Passive leadership abdicates its responsibility. So there's passive leadership. Abraham was passive. Sarah said, "Hey, how about this? Okay." And then when there was a problem, she said, "Well, what are you going to do about it?" He said, "I don't know. You do something about whatever you want to do." He was passive in his leadership. The second thing, the second problem or mistake that we make is not passive leadership, but often it's what I call political leadership. That means it's whatever's popular. I mean, what is everybody saying? Is this a popular decision? And instead of drawing a line in the sand, we go with whatever is popular, like the politicians who do polls and find out, well, do people really like this? Or if they don't, because they're looking for the votes, they're looking for popularity. Abraham failed in this area when it came to Hagar. He really blew it because he was passive and he was political in his leadership. Look at what Proverbs 29:25 says. "The fear of man will prove to be a snare, but whoever trusts in the Lord is kept safe." I think every leader at some time in their life, leaders need to know that you do what is right before God, whether it's popular or not. And listen, if you're a leader in your household, in your business, in the church, in a home group, or whatever it is, listen, when you are at the helm, then you are responsible for those decisions, even if people may be pressuring you to do something. If you know it's wrong, you don't do it, because ultimately you will be responsible before God. And it's not going to work to say, "Well, she pressured me into it," or "he did," or "he did," or "she did." Remember, never sacrifice truth for peace. So Abraham realized at that time that he had made a mistake, and it created more problems, and now no one's happy. His wife's not happy because Hagar's despising her. Hagar's not happy because Sarai's mistreating her. And if the women aren't happy, Abraham's not happy because he's living in a house where there's a lot of chaos, and he thought that he had solved the problem. You see, he left the waiting room out of the door of compromise and created a lot of problems in his life. The fourth point I want you to understand about the place of compromise or the waiting room is this. I want you to write this down. Huge. Never forget that God's mercy is available to those caught in the web of someone else's shortcut. I love this part. Because the real victim in all of this, you know who it was? Hagar. Here's a young girl who's basically a slave in his household. And she has very little power over this. And now because Abraham slept with her, she's pregnant, she's despised, she's caught in someone else's turmoil. Have you ever felt like that? There may be some of you here that your parents are going through a divorce, and it's nasty, and they're fighting with each other, and they're arguing all the time, and I mean, your house is one big mess, and then they're fighting over custody. No, I get her. No, you get her on weekends, and I get her at this time, and the kids are caught in the middle, and they may be saying, hey, why are we going through this? God, why am I in the middle of this? I mean, this is so unfair. I had nothing to do with it, yet I'm in the middle of it. Maybe you're a spouse and your husband is caught in the web of addiction. And your house is going up for foreclosure because, you know, he's gambled it all away or drank it all away or not managed it because he's got a major addiction problem. And you're caught in the middle of it and your kids are caught in the middle of it. And you may say, this is so unfair. God, why am I in the middle of it? It's really not my fault, but I'm caught in this web. Maybe you're working at your job and your boss has made some bad financial decisions and now your whole company is in an uproar and people are being laid off and there's tension at work and you're feeling the strain of it and everybody's coming down hard on you and you're saying, God, this was not my problem, but I'm caught in the mess of someone else's problem.
We'll be right back with Pastor Mark Jobe in a moment. You are listening to our Straight Talk radio message called How to Keep Up Your Faith While You Wait, which is from Pastor Mark's series called Don't Stop Believing, The Power of Relentless Faith. After the broadcast, I'll tell you more about how you can get a free copy of this message as well as the entire series and give you information regarding Pastor Mark's ministry at New Life Community Church in Chicago. Right now, let's get back to Pastor Mark as we continue our message called How to Keep Up Your Faith While You Wait.
Maybe you're a grandmother here and your son or daughter has not been able to take care of their kids and so the kids have been dumped in your lap and you thought you were done being a parent and now you're raising your kids' sons and daughters because they were unable to manage it and you feel like, God, what happened here? I mean, why am I caught in the middle of their mess? How many of you know what I'm talking about this morning? You can relate to that, being caught in the middle of someone else's mess. Well, here's what I want to tell you. I love this part of the story because Hagar finds herself in verse 7. It says at the end of verse 6 that she fled from her. In verse 7, it says, the angel of the Lord found Hagar near the spring in the desert. It was the spring that is beside the road to Shur. And he said, Hagar, servant of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going? I love this, that God found her. She didn't find God. God found her. Don't you love that? Don't you love that God finds us in the middle of our desert? I mean, there Sarah is, a young pregnant girl in the middle of the desert thinking, I have no place to go. I've been kicked out of my house. How unfair is this? No one cares. It's not my fault, and here I am. Yet I love that in the middle of the desert, God cares. And God finds her in the middle of the desert, and not only does he find her, but God speaks to her. Some of you may be in the middle of a desert right now thinking, no one knows what I'm going through. There may be a young girl here that's so full of pain and anger inside that she's cutting herself and wearing long sleeves to school because she doesn't want anybody to know that she's so full of pain that she's cutting herself. There may be a college student here that is so distressed over life and so wants significance and values that she's fallen into an eating disorder. And you know what? Every time she eats, she goes to the bathroom afterwards and she throws up and she's caught in the cycle of bulimia because, and no one knows about it. And everybody thinks she's doing so well. But you know what? She just has this terrible image of herself and she's caught in this cycle of bulimia. And she thinks, I'm all alone in this. No one really knows. No one really cares. No one sees what I'm going through. No one knows the pain that I'm in. She's in the middle of the desert. But I want to say that God does see. And I want to see that God. I want to say that God does care. And so in the middle of the desert, the Bible says that the Lord came to her. And he asked her a couple questions. How many of you know that when God asks a question, it's not that he doesn't know the answer? If God asks a question, he's not looking for an answer that he doesn't know. He's asking you to dig into your soul because he wants you to know that there's answers inside of you. And he asked her this question, where did you come from? And where are you going? Hey, God, didn't you know that? And did you know she came from Sarah's household? Didn't you know that she was from Egypt? Didn't you know she was a slave? Hey, and don't you know that she's in the middle of the desert and doesn't know where she's going? I believe that God was asking a question much deeper than that. I think God was asking, hey, Sarah, hey, Hagar, where did you come from? What are your roots? You were a slave before. You were from Egypt before. Where did you come from? And Hagar, hey, where are you going? You may not know, but I have a future and I have a destiny and I have a purpose and I have a plan for your life. And Hagar looks up and God asks her a where question and she answers with a who question. A who answer. She says, I'm running away from my mistress, Sarai, she answered. Then the angel of the Lord said, go back to your mistress and submit to her. How many of you know that in the middle of the desert, when God speaks to us, he doesn't always tell us what we want to hear? When you're in the middle of a hard time, you want someone to say, hey, escape to the Bahamas. A lot of times God says to us, go back to your problem, face it, and deal with it. So I'm in the desert here. I'm looking for God to give me direction. I've listed my top three places, San Diego, Hawaii, and Orlando, Florida. God, choose where do you want to send me? God says, go back home. God, I'm still listening. Normally, God says, don't run from your problem. Go face your problem and deal with it. Here's what I want you to know. God was telling you to go back to Sarah. It was an unfair situation, yet God said, go back, deal with it. Sarah hadn't changed. God was saying, I'm going to change you and send you back to Sarah. Some of you don't want to hear that. You're going through a tough time in your marriage right now. You don't want to hear go back and work it out. You want to hear escape. The Bible says that God said to her, in verse 10, the angel added, and I will increase your descendants, and they will be too numerous to count. In other words, hey, I'm going to make you a mother and grandmother and great-grandmother. In fact, I'm also going to make you the mother of a great nation. Look what he tells her. He says to her, you are now with child, and you will have a son. And you will name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard of your misery. Oh, I love that God had heard of her misery. She hadn't gone unnoticed to God. Verse 12, and he will be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone, and everyone's hand will be against him. I don't know how you would feel if you had a prophecy that said, hey, what's he going to be like? Oh, he's going to be like a wild donkey. Okay? He's going to be like a wild donkey, and his hand's going to be against everyone, and everybody's hand's going to be against sin, and he will live in hostility towards all his brothers. Who would his brother be? Isaac was one of his brothers, and out of Ishmael came the entire Arab nation. But God was giving hope to Hagar. He was telling her, I have a plan, I have a destiny, I'm going to make a nation come out of you. And I want you to see what Hagar responds. I love her response. Listen to what she says. She gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her. She said, "You are the God who sees me." You see, she didn't even know God up to that time because she had come from Egypt where they worshiped pagan gods. And she had lived in Abraham's household and learned something about Yahweh, the true and living God. But she didn't even have a real relationship with him. And suddenly she realized this God cared about her. This God saw her. This God had not abandoned her. So she says, "You are the God who sees." Have you ever seen at a Sox game, in between the plays, how they scan the audience? They scan around and everybody's talking and eating their popcorn and hot dogs, and then suddenly the camera will zoom in on one person. They don't even know they're being watched, but they realize, aha! You know why? He's the God that sees. And even when you don't know that God is looking, he's looking. He zoomed right in on you. You may not know it, but he's watching. And you may say, "No one even knows what I'm going through," but God knows. You see, he's the God that sees. He's the God that hears. He's the God that knows. And she says, "I now have seen the one who sees me." See, I have finally seen. I finally had a vision of the God who's always seen me. Here's what I want you to know. From the day you were born, God has followed your tracks and your story. From the day you were born, God has always seen you. He's always known you. He's never lost track of you. You have never been a number to God. You have never been a faceless person to God. You've been a name and a person. You've been an individual. And you say, "Well, where was God when I was suffering?" He was there. And where was God when I was in the desert? He was watching you. And where was God when injustice was happening to me? He was there the whole time. And he's followed your story. And he's cared about you because he's the God that sees. Verse 15, "So Hagar bore Abraham a son, and Abram gave the name Ishmael to his son she had born. Abraham was 86 years old when Hagar bore him Ishmael." As we close this time together, I want to remind you of what it tells us. In Hebrews chapter 4:15, it says, "For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses." You see, sometimes we feel like God is so lofty, so far, so distant, so unable to relate to our pain. But through Jesus, the Bible tells us that he is able to relate to our pain and sympathize with our weaknesses. "But we have one who has been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet without sin." You have a high priest that you can come to. You have a mediator that you can come to that understands weakness and hurt and pain and sorrow. And he is able to sympathize and empathize with your struggle. And this morning, as we wrap things up, I want to ask you a question. Let me ask you this. Do you have a vision that God has given you, but that you're trying to fulfill through the wrong door? Are you in the waiting room right now? Maybe you have been waiting for a long time and you have your hand on the handle of compromise or disobedience, and you're saying, "I'm not waiting any longer. I'm out of here." God is speaking to your heart, not through that door, not through that door, not through that door. Maybe you're here and you've been trying to accomplish in the flesh what God called you to do in the spirit. Or maybe you're in the waiting room getting very impatient through the door of compromise. Maybe you're in the middle of the desert right now feeling like God hasn't seen or doesn't care what I'm going through. And I want to say he does.
This concludes the second half of our message called How to Keep Up Your Faith While You Wait, which is part of our series called Don't Stop Believing, The Power of Relentless Faith. As I mentioned earlier, if you would like to have a copy of this message or the entire series, you can download it for free with our Straight Talk app. Just log on to PastorMarkJobe.com. That's PastorMarkJobe, J-O-B-E.com. There you will also find helpful tools that will help you in your walk with God. If you prefer to have a CD of the message, please contact our office at 773-585-3300. That's 773-585-3300. CDs are only $5 plus shipping, and Pastor Mark's first book, Unstuck, is also available for only $10 plus shipping. If you are looking for a home church, we invite you to check out one of our 25 New Life locations throughout Chicagoland. Just log on to newlifechicago.org. That's newlifechicago.org. We would really love to meet you. We hope that you enjoyed today's broadcast. Please join us again on the next Straight Talk as we get into Part 6, A New Future Requires a New Identity. On behalf of Pastor Mark and the Straight Talk team, thanks for listening. Have a great night. God bless.